Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined for another media nerd conversation with Bob Seidman of Sports TV Ratings and Patrick Crakes, who is a former Fox Sports executive and now is an industry consultant. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
All good here. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So the first thing I want to talk about is last week, Katie Nolan announced that her new show, Always Late, is going to be on ESPN Plus. When you hear, so we knew that she was going to have a digital show, but it's unclear. Would it be there? Would it be on Twitter? Would it be on Facebook or some combination or YouTube? What do you guys think about it being on ESPN Plus? Bob, you go first.
So I think next Media Nerd podcast, can we just pick some rando ESPNer and try to re-engineer like their visibility profile? I don't care if it's like L. Duncan or Stan Verrett, it doesn't matter. So as for Katie Nolan, so the problem for me is not a math problem like or a thinking problem. I get you thinking, stick it on Twitter instead with a high profile sponsor. And, you know, maybe that's, I'm making this number up, maybe that's 30% better. But the problem for me is you're focusing on, moving 1/64th of a millimeter to 1/32nd of a millimeter. It's a 100% increase. But if I'm responsible for managing that group, I'm not devoting any brain cells to even thinking about that problem.
What about you, Pat? Where do you think it should be?
I think it being on ESPN Plus is actually important because when ESPN Plus was first announced, a lot of people said, well, you know, that's super and great, but they can't put anything on there. And now here we are a couple months later, and there's just all this stuff on there. You got the UFCs coming. You got the Serie A got announced this morning. You've got MLS out there. You've got some baseball games and some hockey games and a bunch of original content. And now they're going to put, you know, a talent that they really believe in there. And they're really beefing that thing up, and they need a lot of content for it, and they're adding it. So putting Katie in there, I agree with Robert, you know, Katie is maybe not the most important strategic issue they have, but when you throw it all in together, you know, she's an asset, and they're going to put her over there. And at the end of the day, the reason to get a subscription to ESPN Plus is because either you're a super, super, super fan of something, right? Like you got to go in depth with the UFC or you love Italian soccer, or, you know, there needs to be enough things there that you're a fan of that together they collect out to be worth $5 or something a month. And tossing Katie in there is just a value added situation. It also is the kind of format that she thrives at, and they'll be able to do whatever they want there and experiment. And if she really does well on ESPN Plus, then they can scale her out somewhere else. So I think it makes sense.
Well, we discussed. So, hey, Pat, go ahead.
So, Ryan, I just want to ask Pat a question. Like, when they announced the upfronts, I mean, they kind of went to great lengths to attach Katie to ESPN Plus. I'm just wondering if, and that's sort of an ad sales driven thing. I'm just wondering if you could talk about sort of the importance of, you know, where that fits in strategically from an ad sales perspective of just, you know, I don't know what the right frame is of, you know, checking off certain boxes and being consistent about it.
Well, I think they're trying to be consistent. You know, from ad sales perspective and ESPN Plus, I don't necessarily understand how all the ad sales are working there. That property, if it's going to have real value, needs some flagship personalities on it. And the beauty of having ESPN Plus now is whether it be with events like you see with the Serie A this morning, you know, ESPN now gains one really good Serie A match a week for its fully distributed, programmed, linear and digital flagship, ESPN, ESPN2. And then it gains a whole bunch of content on the digital side that makes sense for the Serie A to come to them, and it makes sense for them to program. And putting Katie over on ESPN Plus, making her flagship over there, if she does really, really well over there and drives some subs and gets a lot of traction, and her shows get consumed and advertisers start really getting attached to her, then she can be moved over to the flagship networks and brought into the schedule after having gotten an opportunity to run her show and build her brand inside of the ecosystem. And ESPN Plus has got a lot of utility in the future for that, because, you know, on your programmed networks, you really need now to put in your best content, whether it be a studio show, personality, or event. And you really don't want to have to put in anything that's not really like that. And so this gives them an opportunity to develop talent in a place where they can experiment and spend time growing it, and then move them over into a spot on their linear networks. It reduces risk for them. So I think it's the right idea. When it comes to advertisers and announcing at the upfront, I mean, she is the, I guess she's the biggest face really on that distribution stream, which they're investing in. I know everybody kind of laughed and said, well, they'll never have the NFL over there. Well, like, who cares? It's a complementary model to what they do. So a lot of people have this problem with it's got to be zero sum, or win, lose. And in reality, a lot of this stuff going on in the media business is incremental, right? It's an incremental opportunity to grow and take advantage of this increased media usage bucket. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think if she really, really does well there, they'll move her over to the flagship.
Well, I vigorously disagree with you, because there are some other shows that they're putting on there that I see as a value proposition. For example, they're putting Matthew Berry's show that used to be on ESPN2 with fantasy football, that has like a very devoted audience who seeks the information, on ESPN Plus. They're putting Aria Hawani's show. They've got an NHL show that they're doing. And I can see that with sports-specific content that has a diehard viewership that is going to tune into it. With Katie, who's more of a generalist and a personality, I think that they would have been better off putting her show on Twitter, where she already has her own big distribution. ESPN already has a big distribution. They could have attached a sponsorship with a food or beverage company to the show and made it so that they can show, okay, here's how we're getting the money back for what we're paying for her. Whereas if you look at, I know you're looking at ESPN Plus as a bundle, but if you're looking at how many things that she has to set, if she, frankly, she has to drive 20,000 subscribers to ESPN Plus in order to pay back the seven figures that she's making. Go ahead.
Well, that's not how they look at it. All right. They're not valuing Katie on a cost accounting basis. So Katie is part of a system, right? And you invest in content. And when you're putting together a program schedule or a collection of content, you're taking a portfolio approach. And not everything has to net out on a cost accounting basis. It's what you get done when you sum it up. How much money have you made versus how much you've spent? And how are you growing that? And how is that building towards the future? I think putting her on Twitter is not a necessarily a forward-looking move, because ESPN is building its own digital distribution system to deliver content. And I Twitter, at the end of the day, they're better off with her being value added in subs over on ESPN Plus and then being used on the flagship networks than they are trying to build some separate business for Twitter. Because Twitter, they don't keep 100% of that income. They don't keep 100% of that income.
That's
so
true.
So, Ryan, but I have a question for you, Ryan. Is the problem you're trying to solve for Katie, like the get Andrew Marchand off her back problem? Because that's just not the right problem to solve.
Well, it's partly that, and it's not just Andrew Marchand. He was describing a conversation that has taken place a lot behind the scenes in sports media discussions, but it's more about, I think, putting her in the place where she's going to have the most reach. And I know she does some other stuff. She goes on SVP show and Highly Questionable and Levitard, and she has a podcast, but this is going to be her flagship vehicle. And I don't think, at least in the next year or two, there are frankly going to be very many people who watch her there. And I guess Patrick doesn't see that as that big of an issue, because it's, I guess, a loss leader to try to build it up. But I don't know. ESPN Plus still hasn't put anything on there that I'm going to pay them for. And so I get it. I'm not a soccer guy. I'm not a UFC guy. I'm not a boxing guy. I'm not an Ivy League guy. But it's going to be very difficult for them to figure out a way for me to give them another $60 a year.
Mm-hmm. But what if they're not in a hurry to figure that out today?
If they're not in a hurry to figure that out today, then why put her in a place where I think maybe only like 30,000 people or maybe even less are going to see her show every week?
Get into the pattern of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, she gets to get into the system. They get to work out and see what she does really, really well. They get to have her go to work every day and figure things out. You know, the beauty of Plus is that you can do a lot of experimental stuff over there. And by the way, when you invest in talent, you know, it's infrastructure. You know, what's the value of Linda Cohn on her own? I mean, Linda drives a lot of value across a lot of different shows across all their platforms. But, you know, yep. If you scripted her salary directly to any kind of revenue generation, you'd come up with you'd be like, well, I don't quite know how to do that. So I get sometimes we look at investments in talent and we try to figure out, well, you know, she's got to make so much back. But in truth is that when you have studio shows and pregame shows and editorial shows and entertainment shows, the trick is to really use that talent as much as possible. And if Katie becomes a value add on ESPN Plus, while she's adding value to SVP and she's adding value to other things, because she's pretty versatile. You know, you can plug her in a lot of different places. Well, that justifies the investment. You know, they believe in the talent, right? And now they're going to use it. And using it means let's put it everywhere, especially in our most experimental formats, because she's supposed to be experimental.
Now, I'm not saying I've heard this, but what if they were actually saying, a previous regime made a bad investment, and now we're going to put her in a spot where the least people are going to notice. Could you see them possibly doing that if that was what they decided?
Sure. And we would know if that's really true if her duties on, you know, the four flagship networks were rolled back. We'd learn that over time.
Okay, let's change
the topic.
Let's change the topic. We're going to stay on ESPN Plus a little bit, but we're also going to bring in DAZN, which just hired John Skipper. They've got some boxing rights in Bellator. They're going to be a very big bidder on high-profile talent. And then Bleacher Report Live, which is going to have Champions League. I put DAZN and Bleacher Report Live at this moment in the same bucket that I put ESPN Plus in, which they don't have games that I'm frankly interested in. I don't see them getting exclusive Brewers, Packers, Badgers, or Bucks content in the immediate future. If you had to pick one of ESPN Plus, DAZN, and Bleacher Report Live that you think is going to be the biggest success, Patrick, which one would you be betting on?
ESPN Plus.
What are your thoughts on DAZN and BRY?
I think they both will have a role too. I mean, what I think is emerging on the digital space is a lot of the content that you used to have to kind of take to round out your channel or to take to get, let's say there's a property that has maybe 10% of its content is truly worth investing in. The rest of it, you've got to do something with. That stuff used to find its way 6 or 7 years ago to segmented sports channel like Fuel or Fox Soccer. specialty segmented channels that have gone away. And what's reemerged is these digital platforms have kind of taken that place. They're the place to segment, right? They're the place for the super fan. And the economics work because you charge a nominal fee, because $5 a month is really nominal when you think about it. And if you're a super fan, you get what you want there. Then the best of that content that is there on that segmented digital platform in many ways is then also aired on the big distribution pipe or the flagship. And I think that pattern's beginning to emerge. I mean, I would say that that's what we're going to see more and more of. I don't think you're going to see tier one, tier two property rights, the best tier two property rights on these digital platforms. What you're going to see is a lot of tier three, tier four. And then the trick is for the tier threes and the tier fours to secure some flagship distribution, in particular with ESPN, who has just used Plus as a way to hoover up a lot of rights, right? So they've got a lot of secondary conference rights for college sports now. They're going to put the champ games and some key rivalry games on ESPN, and ESPN2, and UN News. But most of the content for the Sun Belt and other places will be on Plus. Same with like the Serie A, the UFC content. There's going to be a lot of UFC content on there. The fights that are probably not, you know, the 13 pay-per-view prelims won't be there. The best will be on ESPN, but the rest of the super fan will be over there. And I think that's the pattern that's emerging. I do think that they will spend money on talent. I don't know if talent's going to drive any of these subs. I think talent's value added in these subs. It's got to be about events. But if you have a model where you've got one or two different types of distribution systems, which both Turner and ESPN have, I think you've got a little bit of a advantage over the zone at this moment in time. And I also point out that the real investments occurring in the digital space in live sports exclusive rights are occurring with both Bleacher Report and particular ESPN Plus. I mean, those guys have wasted no time. And the zone will get involved. I know some people. You know, so that's my thing. That's my
the zone is pretty deep pockets, though, with being backed by the billionaire Leonard Blavatnik. So they may overpay for something that we do consider to be tier one rights.
Maybe.
Yeah, but they got a tier one right. I was just going to say that, you know, I think the zone is the one to watch, right? Because Bleacher Report and Turner and ESPN, they'll be willing to invest in these services for a long time, and I don't think they have to hit the ball out of the park in the next 5 years. And I think that the zone is going to have much more pressure on it to show results very quickly. So it's going to be very interesting to watch that.
I'd agree with that.
What if Amazon does a cannonball into the pool? How does that affect these three entities?
If Amazon decides to turn the table over, they can do it. But you know, they're going to have to turn the table. They aren't going to turn the table over with a bunch of boxing content that wasn't already distributed in the United States, like naturally. You know, it's going to have to be. They're going to have to come in and take the National Hockey League next year or something like that. That's the kind of table turning exclusivity for tier one that's going to require this. Keep in mind, right, this isn't about somebody with a lot of money who wants to distribute this digitally. The partner, the rights holder, the conference, whatever, they've got to think through the risk and what that makes sense with this too. So there's a lot of risks with going sequestering yourself over to a digital distribution system. No one's really quite done that yet exclusively. And all these sports leagues need worldwide impressions to drive their brands because they have revenue producing streams outside of audiovisual distribution. And going inside a paywall full speed for the NHL or any other tier one, probably tier two rights holder is got some risk attached to it that they got to think through. So it's not just a matter of somebody having a lot of money to pay for things.
Okay, that provides us with a good segue to the NHL. Their current rights deal is $200 million a year with NBC on a 10-year deal that expires in a couple years. And to me, this and the SEC on CBS are the two most undervalued rights packages in sports. When you consider, for example, that ESPN is paying $700 million for their MLB package, which no pun intended is an innings eater, but they don't get any playoffs other than the wild card game. And they are on Sundays and some Wednesdays, some Mondays. But I think the full NHL package valued at less than a third of that is an incredible value for NBC. And I think that when that deal comes up, it at least triples, because I believe that ESPN, Fox, and NBC will all be bidders. And AT&T, Turner Sports, could also be a bidder for it. So I believe that it'll be almost like the WWE rights, where all of a sudden there's more interested parties, the rights triple, and NBC will no longer have it exclusively. What do you think about that prediction, Patrick?
It's possible. I do think that this is – NBC likes to invest and own everything, and it likes to own select things. And so I would expect them – this is a hill they're probably ready to die on. So the question is, will they be able to keep it or not? And it could triple. It could triple. I think it's important to note that a lot of the Foxes and NBCs and ESPNs have been getting rid of these Tier 3 and Tier 4 rights, where they had small rights fees allocated to them just for this purpose, right? Going back to what we were talking about before, where Tier 3 and Tier 4 are ending up on mostly digital distribution for low rights fees. So people have been kind of getting their shorts on straight to go after something. The question is always, do we have enough money and is this a good thing to have? The question is, how much are we going to be able to get from distributors for it if we get it? And do we have programming holes where this makes a strategic fit? And when you sit down and look at that, you can figure out who are the entities that are going to really want this the most. But I expect there to be good bids for the NHL across the board. My gut tells me NBC keeps it. They keep all of it. But we're just going to need to understand how prepared Fox is maybe to use the broadcast television network in this. And just how interested the NHL is in perhaps partnering with ESPN, in particular, helping them be a partner in some of their digital distribution ideas.
Bob, what do you think happens?
I will be surprised if Amazon's entry into sports rights is with the NHL on an exclusive basis. But beyond that, I think Pat's right. I mean, I think the NHL rights is the most interesting one to watch, because I do think that NBC wants to keep it and keep it all. That's their thing, as Pat says, to own stuff. They want to own the Olympics. They want to own Sunday night. They like doing it that way. So we'll see. Like, you know, does Fox just bid them out of the water to the point where or Fox or ESPN or Turner or whoever bid them out of the water to where they just can't stomach the price?
Well, I don't know. Pat said he doesn't see them splitting it, but the thing they just wound up. NBC owns USA, and USA had to swallow splitting WWE with Fox. So when it comes down to whether they'd prefer to split it or lose it all together, I don't know that they want to lose all of that tonnage.
So, Pat, I have a question for you on this specifically. I see USA as an entertainment. That was an entertainment product decision, not a sports media product decision. And so I don't think they thought about that the same way that that Lazarus and his group will think of it at NBC. Does that make any sense, or is that off base?
Yeah, I mean, Bonnie Hammer handled the negotiation for the WWE. She runs USA, in addition to Sci-Fi and a couple other NBC networks. Lazarus and Jonathan Miller consulted with her, but she was the leader of that negotiation. So I tend to agree with you. I also think that there's a big difference between, the NHL is core to their sports business, right? And it's clearly monetizable with distribution partners, both in linear and digital space. And it works well on broadcast. It can be used for retransmission. So to me, NBC is going to keep this, all right? They've made a decision that they're going to do that. What I thought about this last night a little bit, what could throw NBC for a bit of a wrench might be if ESPN and Fox cooperate on a bid, right? And if they cooperate on a bid that allows for broadcast distribution on Fox, because ESPN's really not interested in that, doesn't look like, maybe they are, and they're just planning to unleash a lot more of it at some point. But some kind of cooperative bid for the NHL could give NBC some trouble, because Fox and ESPN together, if Fox's broadcast television network's involved, probably could drive a lot of economics. But, you know, the problem for Fox and ESPN is that the NHL is just the beginning of a long rights renegotiation cycle that's not going to end until 2024 or 2025. And NBC, because they have less sports but are more concentrated, if they get the NHL done, they kind of can, you know, they get the Premier League done, they can kind of wait around for NASCAR and for 3 or 4 years. Fox and ESPN have a series of negotiations coming up at them, just staring them in the face incessantly. And at some point, they've got to keep some of that stuff too. And so they've got to figure out how much money they're going to spend on the NHL, even though Fox could desperately use the NHL on Tuesday and Wednesday nights in the second and third quarters. And ESPN could obviously use the content anywhere because they have so many pipes. So, again, going back to the other guys have so much they've got to also pay for later on down the road. I just think NBC keeps it. But I do agree with Ryan. I think the NHL finally gets paid.
Okay. And now a subject near and dear to Pat's heart, the Fox Sports RSNs. Disney, to get the deal done and really beef up against Netflix, made the concession that they are going to be selling these wildly profitable regional sports networks that combine to broadcast about half of the local MLB, NHL, and NBA rights. So there are some natural bidders, Comcast, Spectrum, AT&T. Holly Wetzel at Awful Announcing speculated that maybe some teams will want to buy these up and keep them as their own networks. And then today, Sinclair said that they are going to be involved in the bidding. Do you think that they get sold as a whole or for parts, or where do you think they end up?
For me? Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. Look, Disney wants to opt. So Disney's going to pay $24 billion for these things, right? They're going to get them, and they're going to turn around and pass them through. Disney would love to have $30 billion when they're done with this, because they've got to turn around and do a lot of work with some things. So so I'm sure they're sitting around there and slicing and dicing this and taking offers, and anything's possible. Whatever optimizes for Disney value is what they're going to do, which is obvious, but it's not obvious what the bidders think optimizes that, right? So if you're Comcast, you could look at this and say, we got a bunch of RSNs, and so here's a bunch of other RSNs. Let's put together the best RSN group we can. We're going to have to get rid of a couple, right? Because DOJ will make us do that. And then there'll be other RSNs back out in the marketplace. And we'll just write Disney a big check and they'll give it to us and we'll blow all the bidders out of the water. Charter could step up because Liberty is a part of Charter. John Malone understands these businesses. And they could come up and say, look, we're just going to buy the whole 22 RSNs and then we're going to create a tracking stock. Or you could see things get chopped up. Comcast says, look, I want 3 or 4. AT&T wants 3 or 4. Maybe a team, though I would think there's only a few teams that I would recommend even try to do that. A team could buy them. It's going to be really, really interesting. The most interesting thing is, and I'm not surprised by this, you know, Sinclair is going to be a big player. And they've already got a fully distributed sports pay TV network. They're going to have, you know, oopsie gundles, billions of television stations. These RSNs make an awful lot of sense in retransmission renegotiations because they're more leverage if you can time the contracts right with the expirations of your stations with distributors. I think Sinclair is a real wild card. I certainly could see Sinclair picking off a reasonable amount of them and just using them as leverage to drive retrans and reverse retrans because these things are just leverage pieces if the contracts are timed right.
Retrans and reverse retrans are?
They're basically where a local television station, local broadcast over-the-air station, goes to a pay TV distributor and says, if you want me to be inside your bundle, and that's a pay TV distributor, it's a linear or digital, you got to pay me. And that's retransmission. And then reverse retransmission is what a network charges a non-owned station, right, like a Fox or an NBC, for the content that they're giving them in prime time and in sports day parts. And so that those streams of revenue have grown as the number of segmented pay TV channels have gone away. That pool of resources has emerged because what we've learned is that people actually really do watch them. People really care about things like their local news, and they care about their local sports, and they care about syndicated programs like Wheel of Fortune. And those stations have emerged as kind of the tip of the spear for both linear and digital bundles. And so they have a lot of value. And if you're in a negotiation, you've got a bunch of stations, and then you've got a bunch of pay TV networks that are RSNs that do really huge numbers inside a region where some of these local stations are, it's just more leverage with distributors to extract more income from.
Bob, do you have anything to add to that?
So, Pat, more questions for Pat. So my curiosity is, I saw, and you saw this, I'm sure. I know you saw it. The uptick in the growth of over-the-air local channel viewing in certain markets.
Yeah.
Given what you ended with, you know, by saying that the strength in local, what do you think that means? Does that add extra incentive here for someone like Sinclair to say, hey, you know what, maybe this is a really, really good idea?
Yeah, I think it does. And I think a lot of it's being driven by household formation within the millennial age group. So look, the oldest millennials are like 38 now. They're not kids anymore. And, they've delayed a lot of things, including household formation. But for the past year and a half, I think there's been 6 or 7 consecutive quarters of wage, net income growth for millennials. And now we're starting to see household formation, right? And what household formation does, and getting older does, is it changes your behavior. And I know everybody wants to say, well, my teenage daughter does X, so therefore she'll be doing X when she's 50, so let's make a bunch of capital investments around that. It's certainly true she's going to do things differently than you, but some things stay the same. And what really changes is when you form a household is the elasticity of time changes. Time just becomes much more valuable. And what does that mean? Well, suddenly you care about the weather. Suddenly you care about the local election. Suddenly you care about a whole bunch of things you never cared before because you've got to be somewhere, you've got to get somebody somewhere, you've got bills to pay, or you've got to worry about your taxes. And so local news, right, suddenly is relevant to you, where it never was relevant to you before. And I think we're seeing some of that. And it's tied to household formation, which is tied to income growth among the millennial, the upper half of the millennial generation, the folks between 30 and 38. And I think we're starting to see that. So that's now got some tailwind behind these stations, and it's driving a lot of value because distributors need to be able to show value to people. Well, buy my bundle, buy my digital bundle, whatever, because I got your local stations in there. If you sell somebody a bundle without them, they're not going to be very interested in it.
Okay. And final topic, as you might have heard, gambling became legal in the United States, and some of the states are starting to ratify and have sports books, and maybe in a year or two, I'd say half of the states in America will have some type of framework for it from a regulatory perspective. So this is pretty undeniably going to lead to a lot of new ad revenue across all sports media verticals. We saw that a few years ago when DraftKings and FanDuel went bonkers before we even really knew whether they were legal. Les Moonves, who is going to, it seems like, survive, which I would not have bet on when the New Yorker story came out, he said that CBS has already noticed some advertising revenue there. It's going to be digital, radio, TV, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not disputing that there's going to be ads. There's also going to be a lot of content. We've seen the Action Network pop up. FS1 is launching a show with Clay Travis, Carissa Thompson, Brent Musburger. Brent Musburger launched a business, Vizen, that is doing pretty well. It's got distribution on satellite radio. We could see that business get acquired for a lot of money. But I think that there is going to be more gambling-specific content than there is an audience for it because of all of these upstarts and established entities chasing the ad revenue. Bob, what do you think about that?
So Ryan, I agreed with everything that you just said. So the ad money is going to be crazy and crazy good. There's going to be a lot of new content. probably much more content than an audience for the content right now. And, you know, the really interesting thing for me isn't the ad money. It's, you know, the more interesting thing for me is sort of this premise that that legalized gambling will lead to more TV viewing of the events, which, you know, at some basic level, I don't dispute. But still, until, you know, everyone in the country can pick up their phone and make pretty much what would amount to any old crazy prop bet that you could think of, my expectations for increased viewership are very, very muted around the gambling. And I'm really curious what you and Pat think about that.
Pat, what's your take?
Well, I think there's going to be economic value created. I think that you're right. A lot of it will be advertising. It'll be interesting to see how much it sustains itself as this shakes out and there's consolidation. And we learn just what the size is of daily informational content around gambling. You know, there always has been some of that, right? That's always existed. And so the question is now, you know, you're basically bringing gambling out of the shadows, right? The money's already there. You're now moving it out of the shadows and into a legitimized public mechanism to commercialize it. So I do think that there's going to be ad revenue. I mean, I remember back in the heyday of DraftKings and FanDuel, I mean, that was literally driving, you know, just one hell of a quarter until the government took the punch bowl away. I mean, that was a lot of fun. I mean, everybody's bonuses were just going, well, we're like, whoa, this is great. But the problem is that sustainable, right? It's like, you know, you can't take one season and then say that's what it's going to be like forever. It seemed to be new and different. And with legalized gambling, what's that going to look like? So I think there's lift. I think it grows the pie. I think from an ad sales perspective, it's going to help. I don't know how big it's going to be. I mean, some people are very, very, very optimistic. I think you should be optimistic there. Pivoting to the viewing, right? I've seen some people tell me how much viewing is going to be driven by this. And I just don't believe that at all. I believe the people who want to gamble regularly are already gambling, right? They already got a guy. They're already gambling. So the idea for viewing, so they're already watching games. They're already driving a lot of the viewing already. The additive viewing thesis requires us to believe that your grandmother is now suddenly going to start gambling simply because it's legal. And she's like, oh, you know what? I can lay 100 on the Packers. Give me that money line. They play well on the road. And I don't buy that, right? Now, it doesn't mean that I don't think that there won't be some moderate lift there, but I would say that probably we're going to be really good on the ad sales side, revenue, and probably not that much impact on the viewing side. Maybe some, but I'd be more under control on that side of the table.
Is there anything we didn't talk about in the sports media realm that is fascinating you guys right now that we should discuss for this audience?
I can't wait for football. What does that say about me? I don't know.
Oh yeah. You know what? We got through all this. We didn't do NFL ratings predictions. Bob, you go first. Flat, up or down this season versus last year?
Down, 5 to 10%.
What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, I think it's down somewhere between 3 to 5.
You know, if we're talking about like how into preseason storylines people are, it could be more drastic than that. Nobody is into any discussion except, but you know, fantasy is about to kick up in the next week or two. Hopefully, no stars get hurt in these preseason games, but. I'm seeing some backwards momentum for the NFL still, and I'd be surprised if they could salvage it this season. We'll see. They need those rookie quarterbacks to be good. If they can get Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Josh Rosen to show some promise, then I think the NFL will end this season in better shape than it's starting it.
Yeah, and look, I would say that, you know, maybe all the program ratings are down 3 to 5%. But my guess is, thanks to Thursday Night Football, that the reach, right, with Fox really coming behind it, the reach is going to go up, right? So, you know, some ways the wrong way to look at these businesses is just from, you know, did the program ratings go down some? Because in an additive media universe, you're probably looking at that across the board. People still watching a lot of it, but they're watching for less time, right? But the reach, you know, how many people interact with it regularly is going to go up. And that says the audience is still there, right? It just means that we have to adjust to a world in which there's a lot of competition for attention. But there's nothing that's going to change, I don't think, the NFL's premiums, and certainly as a viewing property and as an economic property, the networks and the distributors will have to make sure they plan properly. But in a world where everything is going down a little bit, the NFL's distance between everything else actually probably increases its value in the long run, thanks to things like retrans and reverse retrans and CPM increases, because advertisers have to reach somebody somewhere.
Okay. Thank you guys for joining me. This is the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We were joined by Bob Seidman and Patrick Crakes, and we will see you again soon.
Such turns strange.